ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विश्रुणयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैः सुष्ठुवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहि संयतायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृत्तश्रवाः स्वस्ति न पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
We're on verse 19. Mayeva sakalam jatam. Mayeva sakalam jatam. Mayeva sakalam jatam. Mayi sarvam pratishtitam. Mayi sarvam pratishtitam. Mayi sarvam layam yati. Mayi sarvam layam yati. Tad Brahma Dvayam Asmiham. Tad Brahma Dvayam Asmiham. Mayi Eva Sakalam Jatam. Mayi Sarvam Pratishtitam. Mayi Sarvam Layam Yati. Tad Brahma Advayam Asmi Aham. Brahma Advayam Asmi Aham. Mayi, in me, indeed, mayi eva, eva's emphasis, mayi eva, sakalam jatam. Sakalam means all, everything. Everything jatam that has been born, everything that has come into being, it comes into being in me. Okay? Mayi eva sakalam jatam. Mayi, in me, sarvam, everything pratishtitam, everything abides. This is the Purnamada, right? Everything is born from me, comes from me, is sustained in me, is rest, is held in me. Mayi sarvam layam yati. And everything resolves, goes into resolution in me alone. Laya means layam yati. It goes into laya, into dissolution. Mayi in me. Tad brahma advayam asmi aham. I am that non-dual Brahman. Or Tad can be therefore I am that non-dual Brahman. So take Tad as Tasmat. Therefore, Brahma Advayam Asmi Aham. I am that Brahman which is non-dual. I am Brahman which is non-dual. So this is a real jiffy. It has everything in it first. In a way, the whole jagat, the whole universe, is like a mantra. That's why japa is so profound. The mantra comes from silence, is sustained in silence, and resolves into silence. When we do the mantra with japa, like Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, there's a coming into being. As soon as you say the mantra, there's a coming into manifestation. There's the sustaining of the mantra. As the mantra is there, the mantra is being sustained. When the mantra ends, it resolves into the silence. So your very relationship with the mantra is the relationship of the creation to the self. There isn't any difference. Because the Atma, the self that you are, right, the conscious being that you are, is free of the mantra. Right? That's one thing to notice. As you're doing the japa, you notice that the mantra is rising and setting in the silence of your being, which itself is not rising or setting. Nothing is happening to the conscious being. But the mantra has no other home other than the conscious being that you are. It's not that it belongs someplace else or that there's any place else to put it. There is no place else to put the mantra outside of consciousness. Because in fact, there isn't anything outside of consciousness. You can't get beyond it. Consciousness doesn't have borders.
In fact, consciousness itself, of your being, the self-evident being of yourself, is beyond any type of duality. It contains all duality. Duality rises in it, is sustained by it, and sets in it. Right? And so when you're doing the japa, what happens is you start differentiating very clearly that silent being of yourself from the rising and setting of the mantra. So it's creation, resolution, creation, resolution, creation, resolution. And as you're doing that, you start to notice clearly that yourself is not away from the mantra, nor is it involved in it. And both are happening at the same time, right? So that's one of the profound things to see, is that when the mantra is taking place, it doesn't cover yourself. Nothing happens to you. It's not like the mantra rises and you're pushed to the side. The mantra rises, you're aware of the mantra, and your self-evident conscious being that you are is also part of the picture. Both are happening at exactly the same time. You see that? That's the thing. So now, that mantra, say we just have the mantra like Om Namah Shivaya, that can be replaced by, this is a pencil. That's a thought. It could be replaced by, oh, look at those orchids. Doesn't make any difference. A vritti, a thought modification, is a thought modification. Whether the thought modification is a mantra, or a perception, or an intellection, or a fantasy, a conversation, it makes no difference. A vritti, a thought modification, is a thought modification. No matter what form it's in, the thought comes into being, sustained, and resolved, all the while that yourself is present to that occurrence, without being touched or changed in any way by whatever the occurrence is. And so for somebody who's a Jivan Mukta, means somebody who has this knowledge, has nishta in this knowledge, that is the reality. Yourself has been differentiated from the experiences that come and go. That being so let's just look at the ramifications of it. If all of your personal experiences, personal perceptions, personal thought modifications, personal emotions, personal feelings, once you recognize that all of this phenomena is coming and going in your being, it's rising, it's sustained, and it's resolving in your being, and nothing's happening to you, right? Then you have to recognize the experiential reality that your nature is asanga. Asanga means it's not attached to any of these perceptions, because the perceptions come and go. It's not changed by them at all. That means it doesn't belong to them. Any perception, any objectification that you have of anything in the creation, including your body, your sense organs, you know, your thoughts, your emotions, even the ahankara, the I notion, all of these are perceptions, they're all objectifications. All of them take place in you. And you don't change. If you don't change, you're not attached to them. That being the case, what is the difference between my being and your being? If your being is not attached to the perceptions that come and go, okay, you're free of the perceptions and the experiences that come and go. I'm free of them, you're free of them, you're free of them. If we throw all of the perceptions into the pot together, you know, what divides me from you? Nothing. But then what divides me from Ishwar, from Brahma? What limits my being? What limits consciousness? Because in fact, all duality rises and sets in consciousness. There's no attachment there. And even though, let's put it this way, there's no attachment there, because all of our experiences rise and set, they come and go in that changeless self, there's no attachment, but there's also no distance. That's the satyam mithya. all of these experiences rise in me, or experience, they set, they come and they go, you know. But there's no outside, for there's no place for them to go. That's the mithya. Something appears and it disappears. It appears and disappears. It manifests, it goes into unmanifest. It manifests and goes into unmanifest. In my being, not away from my being. There is nothing away from my being. That's the thing to understand. There's no outside. All experience comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. I remain exactly the same. And there are no outside edges. So let me explain like this. You know, I use the meadow example. You imagine a meadow that comes from you. I'd say we're using meadow, doing a visual japa instead of a sound-based japa. Meadow. Really, meadow. But just think about it, though. I imagine this meadow. What's contained in the meadow is everything that's required for duality. You have space, right? You know, you have dimension, you have space, you have the change, you have trees, you have all kinds of objectification, you've got beings, you've got clouds, you've got the sun. You have your meadow universe. You have a meadow universe. Meadow. Universe comes, universe resolves. Meadow universe comes, meadow universe resolves. Where does it come from? Where does the meadow universe come from? It's born from me. There isn't any place else. The time and the space and the duality belong to the meadow. When the meadow resolves, there is no time, there is no space, there is no duality, there are no objects, there is no other place. Place belongs to imagination. Space exists in the meadow imagination. Space exists in the creation. The creation comes, space comes, time space, time comes, duality comes. The creation resolves, space is gone, time is gone, duality is gone. What is left? When the duality is gone, the space is collapsed. There is no place left, right? When space collapses, there is no space now. There's no space, there's no place, right? No space, no place. So what is left? It's only me. And the me, the conscious being that I am, is free of space. Means it doesn't have a right side or a left side or an up or a down. It's just infinite me. That's why we say advayam, non-dual. Space has collapsed. The space is resolved. And now there's only me. Right? And what are the boundaries of me? Once space is gone, what are the boundaries of me? Well, it's not about boundaries anymore. It's only about one without a second. Right? That's why when you're doing the japa and you recognize the differentiate your being, the conscious being that you are, it's not about size. It's just about my own presence. If you had to ask yourself, when you differentiate yourself from the mantra, for instance, how big are you? How small are you? What color are you? How tall are you? The words they're meaningless. They don't touch you. Those dualities don't touch you. Do you have any edges? Inappropriate question. Do you pervade everything? Inappropriate question. You don't pervade anything when the imagination is withdrawn or when the duality is withdrawn. There is nothing else. And so now, when you recognize that there's just me, I'm not big, I'm not small, it's just me. Just this core, very personal me, the conscious being. Not the personal body, not the personal mind, not the personal emotions, not the personal ahankara. Just the personal presence. The personal presence that makes me me. That is Brahman. that Brahman I am. It's not like there's some other Brahman out there to have an experience of. It's the recognition that I, this very personal me, is Brahman. It's the very personal me that is you. And is you, and is you, and is you. It is the only personal me that there is. And that personal me is the personal me which is the self of all beings. And so once I know me, I've differentiated me, recognizing, wow, all of this phenomena takes place and I am always there untouched. It all takes place in me and I am always the same. All emotions take place in me, I am always the same. All perceptions take place in me, I am always the same. I'm always the same because I'm asangaha. That's why we went previously to the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, back to the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state. Through all those states of experience, I remain. So we use these waking and dream states, differentiating them, to notice who remains. The dream experience is negated. The waking state is negated by the dream state. You take on a different body, you're in a different universe, you have a whole different thing going on there. Totally different than the waking state. But it's me. I have no problem with that. I don't have any problem with jumping universes. No problem with changing bodies. No problem with even becoming a different gender or being an animal. Or no problem with moving into a dream state where I don't even have a body. I'm just a whole. There's no problem with it because I, what makes me me, am a sangha. I'm not touched by the changes, the presence or absence of the universe, or one universe replacing another, or the dream state replacing the waking state. And I'm not at all touched by the deep sleep state either. It's no problem for me at all to have no universe here. It is no problem for me to not be a knower. The universe is no subject object. I didn't mind at all. In fact, I would rather like it. just like we like, samadhi for meditators.
Yeah.
How we really enjoy totally absorbing the mind just to be with myself. Where the mind is, the subject-object duality is resolved. We love that. All we're doing is resolving the universe and just abiding as me. In all these meditations that we do, we're resolving the universe and just abiding as me. Deep sleep is what we call the lazy man samadhi, because you're just going to sleep, resolving the universe. Okay, the mind is asleep. It's in its a resolved condition. It's in its causal condition. It's not awake, but at least it's not creating any problems. And then I'm just me with the whole universe collapsed experientially in terms of my experience. The whole universe is collapsed, And then I'm just there with the knower known collapsed into its unmanifest condition. Love it. Because of my nature is ananda. Right? It's the wholeness that we seek in meditation, the wholeness we enjoy in deep sleep. And the wholeness we enjoy for moments in the fulfillment of a desire or in holding a child. Tremendous ananda, of that resolution, just to be with a child. The tremendous ananda that brings because it's a resolution of the mind. That ananda is my being. And that being is the very being, the asanga being that you notice never changes for a jnani. What makes a person a jnani really is that they've differentiated the satyam from the mithya. The mithya is the experiences that are coming from me, they're rising from me, they're sustained in me, they set in me. That's the mithya. They have their being in me. They appear and they disappear. They appear and they disappear. Mithya. None of them are away from me. I lend my existence to them all. All the experiences. That's why mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, that mantra enjoys me for its being, for its consciousness, for its very essence. It itself is ephemeral. Right? It has no being apart from me, that's why it can come and go. Just think, you say Om Namah Shivaya, it comes from the being and it goes completely. Not partially. It comes and it goes. It comes and it goes. All experience is like that. It comes and it goes. But while it's here, it enjoys solid reality, which is me. I am the solid reality, the being that it enjoys. Everything. It is. All these things enjoy being. Okay? But what is the being they enjoy? The being they enjoy is the solid reality, which is myself. I'm the Satyam. But we're so used to, because we have a body, mind, sense organs, we're so used to experiencing this creation as part of it, subject and object. This body is made of the same basic materials as the rest of the creation. My body and my sense organs, you know, it's made of the same material. And so this subject is experiencing this object. And so I'm totally contained as one of the objects, one of the things in the universe. So that's why we have to slow everything down to realize that this body, mind, sense organs, is part of the universe, and this universe of which it is part of rests in me. This body, mind, sense organs belongs to the universe, and this universe rests in me. That's why doing the mantra, if you can see the truth of it with a mantra, you can see the truth of it with the rest of your experiences. And once you recognize that your being, that's why the japa is so useful, you recognize your being is not coming and going, but is the very foundation of the mantra. So the mantra takes place, it rises in silence, it is held in silence, the silence of awareness, and it resolves into the silence of awareness. Once you can recognize that all of the experiences you have, all of the emotions that you have, all of the perceptions that you have, rise in the awareness you, are held in you, and set in you, then that's Satyam Nitya. You're the Satyam, all of this is the Nitya. Nothing touches you in any way, ever at any time. And that doesn't mean that you don't have emotions. It doesn't mean that you don't have feelings, or that you don't have, or that the world all of a sudden becomes Swargaloka. It's not like the world becomes a heaven, you know, or that all of your experiences become just fine and dandy. The same Punyapapa, the same Prarabdha Karma that brought you this far will continue on giving you happy events, happy situations, and hard situations, and all different genres of situations that will continue. You know, continue that. People that are, you know, amenable to you or friendly to you will come into your life, and people that are there to irritate you and cause you problems will also come into your life. That's all part of the problem. It's not going to stop. But there does come a time when your mind stops depending. You know, your mind. That's also part of the mitya. Right? But the mind is reflects and is really the home, in a sense, for you, for your being. The mind becomes devoted to the wholeness of yourself, the changelessness of yourself. And from that vantage point, experiences the world, not asking it any longer to be responsible for your wholeness, right? Because you've recognized the truth, Satyam. You've recognized the truth of what the wholeness is. That's the whole thing. When you fulfill a desire, you experience wholeness, because for that moment, your mind becomes quiet. That's the great thing about fulfilling a desire. For the moment, you become desireless, right? And that desireless mind is the mind of a jnani. You're in Mahatma now for the moment. Because your mind is fulfilled, it just feels the desire, and now it's in deep peace. Right? So all that means is that at that moment, your mind is not creating agitation, it's not generating pain or disturbance or hatred or dislikes or fear or stress or whatever. It's not involved in any of that activity at the moment. So the mind is now not competing with your own being, with all of its different types of feelings and emotions. There's just no competition because the mind has become quiet for the moment. And so then you say, ah, all is well with me because of this. Because of you, all is well with me because of your smile. Or all is well with me because you love me. All is well with me because of whatever desire I've just fulfilled. And so then I love that object of desire. But for a jnani, this kind of circuitous route is given up, which is a tremendous freedom. It's now the mind says, all is well with me because that's the nature of the self. Right? And so I'm not dependent upon the mind to find something to make it happy so that it can relax, so that then it will ignorantly just reflect the self and then say, all is well with me. Now it just goes directly to myself because all is well with me. That's the nature of the self, and all is well illumines whatever is going on in the mind. So for jnani, you can even say, I am fine, my mind is a mess. So, because you're fine, and that part of the fineness of your being isn't hidden by the mind. Again, that's why japa is so useful, because when you're saying something like Om Namah Shivaya, that's not creating a problem for you. And so you can easily, and it brings in the sacred. So at that time you can easily see that yourself is not disturbed by the mantra. Right? With the mantra you can say, all is well with me while this mantra is occurring. This mantra is taking place in all is wellness. The all is wellness, the ananda of my being, the depth of my being, which is fine. If this depth of my being were always here, there'd be no problem. Well, it is always here. It is always here, even in the presence of an agitated mind. And so that's the nice thing, you know. Otherwise, a samsari, somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge, all isn't fine when the mind is agitated. I can say, my mind is agitated or I have some sorrow, you know, for whatever reason. But that sorrow is taking place in the fullness of myself, which is as experiential, as present as the sorrow. When you do japa, you notice that your being is as present as the mantra. Right? You notice, I am there, the mantra is there. The mantra doesn't cover me. I am there, the agitation is there. The agitation doesn't cover me. I am there, the sorrow is there. The sorrow doesn't cover me. I am there and the joy is there. The joy is wonderful, but it also doesn't cover me. In fact, I'm more profound than the joy. I'm more profound than the bliss. Because it is the wholeness which is my being. That is the satyam, it's the truth of the whole creation. And so as I understand that, it's not just the mantra comes in me, it's my experiences come in me, it's the universe comes in me. Because I'm not an object in the universe to be limited by the universe. If I were an object in the universe, like this body is an object in the universe. It's limited by the universe. I'm an object in the universe, right? So this body is limited by your body. But consciousness is not an object in the universe. You can't objectify your being. It's self-evident. It's self-shining. But it's not an object. You try sometimes. That also is a really useful meditation. Try to objectify just consciousness itself. You can't do it. You know, in fact, the more you try to objectify the consciousness, the more you resolve into it. The more you resolve into it. Right? The more you try to objectify it, the more you resolve into it. There's no subject-object with a space in between. But if you can't become an object, if you can't objectify yourself, you don't exist within time and space. Right? So if you don't exist within time and space, you have no limit. Just think about it. Remove time and space. What's your limit? It's Advaita. That's Advaita. Also, to try to recognize what we mean by satsang mityam. The whole Vedanta is satsang mitya, really. You know, you can recognize it just with japa. What is the relationship between your being, the consciousness, and the mantra? Does the mantra have any being outside of you? Is there any place for it outside of you? You can look at that as you're doing the japa. It has no home outside of the conscious being itself. And yet it comes into being and goes out of being. That means it doesn't have any substance of its own. The being from which it comes, the being which sustains it, and the being into which it goes, that being is the satyam. Because it doesn't have a beginning or an end. Right? That's what's real. That's the truth. So it's a big verse. Let's do the next one. Talk more now about Brahman. Anoraniyan ahameva tadvata. Anoraniyan ahameva tadvata. Mahanaham vishwamidam vichitram. Mahanaham vishwamidam vichitram. Puranatoham purushohamishaha. Puranatoham purushohamishaha. Hiranmayoham Shivarupamasmi. Hiranmayoham Shivarupamasmi. Says Anoho Aniyan Ahameva Tadvat Mahan Aham Vishwam Idam Vichitram Puranataha Aham Purushaha Aham Ishaha Hiranmayaha Aham Shiva Rupam Asmi. So now this is a Nididhyasana type of verse. That's me. I am. So is the other one. I am the one from whom the creation comes, into who sustains it, and into whom the creation resolves. Therefore I am that non-dual Brahman. Myself, I am that self which is infinite and non-dual. Now here it says, Aham, I, Aham Asmi. Asmi is at the very end. Aham Asmi. Aham eva asmi, I indeed am, anoho aniyan. An anu is an atom. Like in the Hindu darshanas, anu is the smallest particle that can be imagined. We'd say like an atom. Of course we have so many smaller particles than an atom. But go to the smallest one imaginable. The smallest particle imaginable is called an anu. So we'll say like an atom, anu. I am smaller than the smallest. The smallest particle that there is in this creation, I am smaller than that. Tadvat, and in that way, Mahan, I am bigger than the biggest. Mahan means I am also the biggest. I am smaller than the smallest thing that there is, and I am bigger than the biggest. And at the same time, Aham Vishwamidam Vichitram. At the same time, I am this Vishwam, this universe, which is Vichitram, a manifestation of duality. So I'm smaller than the smallest and I'm bigger than the biggest, and I am this whole manifest universe also. Smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest means in the Satyam Mitya, what actually is the content of whatever is. Like say if we take the clay pot, it can be a little tiny, tiny, tiny clay pot, or it can be a great big, huge clay pot. Whatever it is, however big it is, clay is its being. However small it is, whatever the form is, the smallest form imaginable, clay is its being. Right? But if we're working with pot. Here, you take the smallest particle that there is, that one could possibly imagine. In fact, we would say, in terms of Vedanta, we'll say, in terms of Maya, There is no smallest particle. It's infinitely divisible. As long as a particle takes up space, as long as a thing takes up space, it can be divided. If it can be divided, right, then it can be divided again. So you have to get to, finally, you have to get to that which is free from space, free from length. And if it's free from space, free from length, it doesn't exist within the manifest creation. So here we say, but we'll just imagine, the smallest conceivable particle, what is its being? Is Brahman. The largest conceivable particle, still conceivable universe, it has to have an essence, it has to have a being. What is its being? So I'm smaller than the smallest, I'm larger than the largest, nothing can contain me is the idea. I am the self, or another way to say it, I am the self of all beings. I am the self of all things. No matter how small the thing is, no matter how large the thing is, I am itself. So I'm going to be smaller than the smallest, greater than the greatest because it doesn't contain me, I contain it. If it contained me, the greatest thing that there is contained me, then I would be an object within it, right? But I'm not contained. The Atma, the self, is not contained by a form. Think of it like this, again, just to make this a little bit more clear. When we say satya mithya, this whole creation is nothing but, Swamiji will say like this, this whole creation that we perceive on every level, it's nothing but names, right? Names that can be named with smaller names. Names, he'll say like this, names within names within names within names within names. There's no end to it. Like this is a name for a lamp, but this lamp has other names, right, that are involved with it. Like the lamp can be, now we can go into smaller units, like the pole and the light and the basin and the bottom and the screws, etc. Right? Names within names, and then the screws can go into smaller components. Every single part of this can go into smaller components. Those are names within names within names. Why does he say names within names within names? Because really, there's nothing there. And if there's nothing there but a name, because the name itself, the thing itself, can be resolved into smaller units. So the name is only, it's only a name in fact. There's no real thing there. Everything breaks down into smaller and smaller things. So Swamiji's just forgotten about the things. There are no things. It's what it amounts to. So he doesn't say things anymore. He just says, oh, there's a name, and there's, well, that name has small, other names, and within those names are more names, and within those names more names. It is infinite. That's Maya. Right? But none of those names, you can't find, in analysis, you can't find the thing. Right? So he just says names within names within names. That is mithya, that's the nature of this creation. But what is in the end the thing? The thing is that which is in fact smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. It is the very, very being itself. Right? In the end, the only thing, what we call the only vastu, the only thing that is really there, is the conscious being, is satchit. Consciousness, which is awareness. That's the one thing you can never break down. All of these things, names within names within names, all take place within satchit, within conscious being. The conscious being, that name remains. We'll have names within names within names, but those names within names within names are taking place in the satchit, consciousness, which is awareness. That never changes. So that's not a name within a name. There's no consciousness within consciousness within consciousness, or existence within existence. There's just consciousness, which is existence. See what I mean? There's nothing inside of it. You can't break it apart. It's Advaita. But here, in the names within names, what that amounts to is that there is no thing out here. All the things are just names within names infinitely. That's the nature of Maya. But I am that which is smaller than the smallest and greatest and greater than the greatest. I'm not contained. I'm the very being in which these names are the names of the names take place. And so then he says, and at the same time, all these names within names, this whole universe, I am that too, because I am itself. It's like the clay saying, you know, I am clay, and I'm also the pot. Right? The clay says, I am clay, and I'm also the pot. I say, I am the Satchit. I am the conscious being, and I'm also the universe. Right? Because there is no substance other than me. So of course I'm this universe. Just like the clay can say, of course I'm the pot. Who else is the pot? There isn't anything else. There's only me. I'm clay and the pot. Right? So I can say, there's only me here. This conscious being that I am the universe too. I am this whole manifest universe because it has no being apart from me. Then it says, and puranata, and I am free from time. I'm puranata means ever new and ancient. I am ever new and I am ancient. It means I am timeless. I am free from time. Aham purushaha. Here purushaha resolves into purna. I am purnaha. I am absolutely full. I am ishaha. I am the Lord, means the one who directs this whole show, in the sense that from the standpoint of Parameshwara, from the standpoint of Ishwara, this whole creation that is manifest has an infinite order. And that order that holds this whole creation together, as we go on discovering the order, in every field of knowledge, we go on discovering the infinite order of this creation. I am that infinite order. I am the Lord of this whole thing. Just like for you, if you have a lucid dream or say you have an imagination, the meadow. You can say, from the standpoint of having the Maya at your disposal, you can say, you know, I'm the Lord of this meadow. Because it's my meadow. The meadow comes from me, sustained by me, it resolves into me, it's my meadow. So as the whole of this whole creation, if Bhagavan were to talk about it, he'd say, yeah. Comes from me, sustained by me, resolves into me, it is me. I am the Lord of this creation. Hiranmayaha aham. Hiranmaya means made of gold. It's a word we use for consciousness. You know, Hiranyagarbha, that whose womb is Hiranya, the golden womb, means the one who is conscious, infinite consciousness, infinite knowledge. I am Hiranmayaha, Shiva Rupam, and Shiva Rupam is me. I am Shivam. Shiva means that which is auspicious, that which is a blessing. My very being is the most auspicious, is the most blessed, right? And again, with japa, as you recognize in contemplation and with japa, when you recognize yourself, the freedom, tremendous freedom of yourself, the ananda, that ananda, the very blessing of your being, that we call Shivam, that which is the most auspicious, the most blessed, the most free, and that I don't have to go anywhere for. It's my own nature, and as the mind starts to discover it, it rests there in gratitude, right? In ananda, in joy. And from that perspective, then it deals with the samsara. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. Objectively deals with it. That's the thing, you can objectively deal with what the creation is doing, what your prarabdha is doing, can objectively deal with it because you have a home base, which is Shivam, which is so strong, so full, so complete, so auspicious, and the mind becomes more and more satisfied staying home. Satisfied staying home, it then lives life fully, actually. Swamiji often says, you know, the jnani is the one who can really enjoy life. You can really enjoy your family. You can enjoy the people in your life, you know, your co-workers, because you don't need them to be different. You can be totally with them, you know, because you don't put this burden on them of, you know, you have to be like this for me to be happy. You're not being like that, and so you're just a pain in the butt. They don't want you. Really. You can give your world, the world, your world, so it's such a gift to say you're fine, you know, you are fine with me. That's a huge thing to be able to give, to say you're fine with me. You know, you can deal with the problems that come up objectively because you're not dependent on them for your wholeness. So we grow into that. We grow into that wholeness. It's a beautiful thing. Knowledge doesn't make you someone who can't be engaged with others. It's the opposite, in fact. It gives you tremendous freedom to be engaged with others. It's not that if you're a jnani, you can't love others. It means that you're a jnani, you're free to love others. You're free to be in relationship. You're free to have all of these things because you don't need them in order to be full. If you don't really need them to be full, then you can happily have them. You can happily do all these things. It's a beautiful thing. It requires maturity. Maturity requires time.
It requires what?
Time.
Time.
Right. Let's take just a minute. Purnamidam, Purnamidam, Purnamidachate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva, Vachishate, Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha, Hari Om.
Vairagya is when the mind it doesn't look for the wholeness in the world, but looks for that wholeness in the being, right?
Yes, you know, I think it's Vairagya is twofold. The first part is kind of the hard part for mumukshu, is when you realize that the world is not capable of giving me any kind of lasting ananda just by its nature, because everything in the world is changing and finite, so it can't do it. It can't give me anything that is going to stay. That's the hard part. That's one of the things that makes a person a mumukshu. But that vairagya resolves with knowledge. It resolves into the solution to it, which is that the ananda of myself is the fullness that I actually seek through the fulfillment of all of these desires. And as that becomes recognized, then the need for all of these objects to make me happy drops off. My relationships don't drop off. My love, my care, my involvement because of the prarabdha, that doesn't drop off. But what drops off is that you have to be like this in order for me to be whole. So, you know, I use it as the desire template is I want this so I can be happy. That's just everybody's situation. I want this so I can be happy. And the negative is I don't want this so I can be happy, right? If I don't want it so I can be happy. If I want it so I can be happy. But what about when you have recognized that the real source of ananda is the Atman, the self? Then, because of your prarabdha, the karmas that caused you to take this birth, you still will have I want this and I don't want this. That's going to be there. Preferences will be there. You'll have urges to go in this direction or that direction. You'll want this or you want that, just by the very force of your prarabdha. But this last part of I want this so I can be happy, that so I can be happy isn't there. Now you can say, happily I want this and happily I don't want this. Right? That's the tremendous freedom. And this thing is something that's missed by a lot of the kind of new age spiritualities that have come in. It's not like Vairagya is not like this, you know, where you have to try to keep everything away, or not like things. I don't like this, and I don't like this because I have dispassion, you know. It isn't that. It's like the Swamiji uses the example, you know, of the helium balloon for a child. A child really loves. I mean, I remember when I was little, we would go down to the boardwalk in Santa Cruz. And we'd always, first thing was to get these balloons, you know, these helium balloons. I loved them. And of course, at some point I would always let loose it, you know. And I would be really kind of downcast because I lost my balloon, you know. But now as an adult, if I were an adult, you know, I would just enjoy the ride of the balloon, you know. It's fine. I have the balloon. I don't have the balloon. That's all right. I don't mind.
How about your economic fortune?
But the world has to become like that helium balloon for an adult, not like for a child. You know, and that takes a lot of assimilation of knowledge, a lot of maturity, a lot of experience in the world. Also, either you bring in from the last life. From your last life, you're bringing a lot of assimilation of experience, you know, or you're gaining a lot of it in this life that you need for that vairagya, you know. And you find the more that you're able to just objectively, you know, be with the situations and live out your prarabdha, the better it is, actually. It doesn't help you. Say with worrying and all of this, it doesn't accomplish, it doesn't help, it doesn't do anything for you. Well, you know, it's just, what helps is you have things, the universe is giving you a handful of stuff to do every moment. And what helps is to simply do it. The worry itself just creates misery, you know, and so that all of these things you keep learning, you know, in the light of this knowledge, in the light of understanding Ishwara, understanding that this universe is a big story in which you have a part to play. You're not the writer of the story as a jiva, you know. You're playing a part in the story. And so every moment, every day, you're playing a part. And so you try to play your part well.
Well, how about this side of if I could only be this way, then I could be happy.
That's the samsara.
Yeah.
And so when you feel that way, that's when you bring in your knowledge. You can ask yourself, is that really true? Really? Because those feelings will overwhelm us, you know. But then when they're overwhelming and making you miserable, then when you get a little space in there, and you say, okay, is this true? Is this really true? And then you bring your knowledge. You know? That's how we bring the mind back. We don't really bring the mind back with any type of rope or anything. You know, you bring the mind back only through your understanding. If, say, in your contemplation or in class, you can have a resolution and you see it. It wipes away, you know, the stress or the hurt or the agitation or the stress or the worry. It gets wiped away in a class. That's why it's good to come to class. You know, clears the decks. Okay? Then you go out and it all starts building up again, but then the next week you come to class and get a new start. But again, you can get a new start at class, or you can get a new start in the morning in meditation. Then what you have to do is when your mind gets overwhelmed by some of your worries and whatnot, then when you get a little space, then you just bring back the class. You bring back your meditation. Swamiji used to say a mantra. He used to say, Om Tat Sat. That was his mantra. Om Tat Sat. And then that, when he said say that, Om means Om, right, the whole name for everything. And then Tat is that, is Tat, that is the truth. It's like saying Om is the truth. And Om is the name for Parameshwara, for Ishwara, really, for Brahman. Say Om is the truth. So that mantra meant something to him.
Yeah.
So when things would get a little overwhelming, he'd just say Om Tat Sat. So, you know, but these are helpful, right? That's why I even knitted the asana. If you say something like Shantoham, and the word Shanti or Shanta means something to you, it brings, those words bring you back to the truth, because your mind's just all of a sudden been taken on a ride. So you have some sort of mantra or statement that's meaningful to you.
Breathing techniques are good too.
They are.
If I come to a red light, sometimes I'll just go, knowing it's going to be 30 seconds, I'm going to be stopped there. I'll just go on one, on two, you know, breathe in, two, on 10,
yeah.
And hold for another on, you know, or whatever, and exhale to that.
You know, it's true. That's good. They're just devices.
Yeah.
That, you know, they're devices that you use because your mind's so used to being taken out, you know, on a ride. Like a ship at sea, that's what Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita said to Krishna, you know, how to bring my mind back? It's like in an ocean storm, like a ship at sea in an ocean storm.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna says, yes, it's very hard to control, do this.
I was wondering, when something is resolved, I don't know if it's properly said, but into what does it resolve?
Like for me, do you mean a thought? Like for instance, you can say that it resolves into Maya, into unmanifest condition, but the substance of it is consciousness. So it doesn't have any being at all apart from consciousness. So one way to think of it, it's like, how does the pot resolve into clay? It already is the clay, but the pot doesn't have any being apart from the clay, right? Or say if you hold the clay pot in one side and hold the rope snake in another, how does the snake resolve into the rope? If a rope's been mistaken as a snake, how does the snake resolve into the rope? That's the satyam mithya. It has no real reality. How does an imagination like the meta imagination resolve into the self? It has no independent reality. That's what we call Maya. Yeah. It doesn't have an independent being of its own. And that's why we say this Maya is something that has the self for its being, and then it projects and it resolves. You know, it projects like a meadow or whatever imagination is there, or this universe for that matter, and then it resolves. It has no second place other than the self. And so, in fact, understanding that makes these meditations like imagining a meadow, imagining the ocean, imagining a pot, imagining a flower, and watching the thought come and go. You come and go. What remains? And where did it come from and where does it go? Who is there? And it's you. It's your being. That's why the japa is considered so, so powerful, because you slow down the mind by the repetition of the mantra. You break associative thinking, and then you start to have the experience comes to the forefront of a thought coming and resolving into a silent self.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see that relationship between the thought and the self by doing the japa, then you can see it in relationship to everything else. Because there isn't any difference. One thought, like one mantra, stands for any thought. Right? Like I said, like Om Namah Shivaya, this is a pencil, imagine a meadow. They're all just thoughts.
Right? How does energy play into this? I mean,
energy is part of the creation. That's in say a Vedantic model, we'd say that the whole stuff of Maya is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas.
So
the whole Maya itself, that's responsible for the manifestation of the creation, is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. What that would be saying is sattva would be like that which reflects consciousness, the intelligence principle. Rajas is energy, that which is responsible for motion on every level is rajas. So energy is rajas. And then tamas is what is responsible for matter, for the appearance of names and forms. So energy is just really matter. Also matter isn't anything different than energy. But then what allows that matter to be held in a form? That's tamas. So, but energy is not Brahman. Energy is not the self. Energy belongs to Maya. Yeah. That's why now, if you use the say the meadow imagination, there's movement in the meadow, like the wind is blowing, the grass is, etc. People are walking around. Animals are there. The energy and the motion exist in the meadow. When the meadow is resolved, the energy is resolved. Resolve doesn't mean become non-existent.
No, that's what I was trying to think. What it means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Maya, we don't say Maya becomes non-existent. But it has, the thing is, it's non-existent in the fact of not being there, but we say it's mitya. It doesn't have any independent reality. There's a big difference.
I see.
Yeah. Like we would, for non-existent, we use the word tucham. Tuchin means like something that's absolutely non-existent. Like they use an example like the horn of a rabbit or the son of a barren woman or a flower in the sky, far apart in the sky or something like that. Something which they will say, this stands for something that is not. We don't say that about Maya. Rather we say Maya has no independent existence. It depends totally for its being on Brahman.
Yeah. Might be kind of a stretch, but I was just kind of imagining that, you know, like the analogy of a sound wave, where, you know, sound requires air or whatever, and it's a vibration in the air.
Yeah.
And so there is no sound apart from the air, so right. To speak. The medium that carries it, you can't separate. But that's also, that's not to say that the sound doesn't exist.
Yes, you know, that's right.
The plane or whatever where it exists is, you know, it's beyond the air, but if we are having conversation per se.
That's exactly, yes. Well, you done? I think we're done.